Conclusion of the trial, and right at the forefront is Carol Lieberman. She is without a doubt forensic psychiatrist slash expert witness and jury consultant extraordinaire, also known as America's psychiatrist, the aforementioned Carol Lieberman, and we got her for a couple of minutes. Great to have you back on the show, Carol. Quite a week it has been. Quite a week it has been. And there is so much to kind of dissect when all said and done with this case, you know?
Yes, absolutely. And I think one of the biggest lessons that we need to learn is that when there's a high-profile case, the juries need to be sequestered.
Yeah. I mean, really, that's the overall thing, too. But when you look at this case and the summations and everything else, you know, it doesn't help when you have a Maxine Waters doing what she did about getting ready to be confrontational if the verdict doesn't go the way of the people. You had the president chiming in. You know, I thought Judge Cahill said it best. And unfortunately, you know, we were all kind of under the notion that this thing could have taken a turn with some of the comments the judge made by bringing up the fact after the defense attorney, Eric Nelson, cited, you know what, there's just too many outside factors here. Media, Maxine Waters, U.S. representative saying what she did. I mean, you know, it's hard to kind of shut these things off, but everybody was making a comment here, and the judge was right. You are interceding in the courtroom, the justice system. You can't do that. Let things lie the way they are in your neck of the woods. Let us handle in here what he was saying, pretty much.
Well, yes, but, you know, it's kind of interesting that he was, and it's good that he was saying that, because he realized that he was the one who should have made the decision from day one to sequester the jury. First of all, he should have done a change of venue, which they asked at the very beginning. But the fact that the jurors only took 10 hours to come to a verdict shows that before they went into the jury room, they already had their minds made up. They didn't ask for any other pieces of evidence to be seen again. And clearly there were lots of complicated issues between the medical issues and the, you know, whether it was appropriate use of force or not. You know, one could have talked about those things for a very long time. So I think the fact that every day they came to the court and they saw these mobs gathering and just waiting, you know, to jump on the verdict. And as you were saying, Maxine Waters, of course, and the murder, well, I don't want to say murder, the killing, the unfortunate shooting of Dante Wright, the unfortunate shooting of Adam Toledo, and of course Biden, although the jury was supposedly sequestered when he made his remarks, although these things get in, you know, can get into the jury. So really, I think there's definitely going to be a request for an appeal.
I think the question will come up on twofold here. A, you get a change of venue on the appeal, number one. Number two, what about the sequestering? That'll be interesting the way that goes down. What do you think?
Well, you know, I think probably when they ask for an appeal, I think it's going to go into a plea agreement, a plea deal. I mean, our country does not need to have this case go on again, you know, and be tried in a court again. That would just be so damaging psychologically to all of us. But I think what, you know, what this shows also is that there are a few bad apples in, you know, in the police. But for the most part, we need to be very grateful that these men and women are coming out, not only, you know, taking a risk with their life the normal way that it was, just in being involved in all kinds of situations, but now with the pressure, cops have bounties on their head. It's like, you know, there's something to be proud of if you can go after a cop, and also, you know, to get the money, to, you know, the millions of dollars that the Floyd family got and so on. So I think what needs to happen is that there needs to be psychiatric exams every 1 to 3 years, just like they're certified on their weapons. They can be certified on their mental health, because after a while of being in one violent situation after another, as Chauvin was, you can have, it's likely to have PTSD. And then to not be able to have as good judgment when you're in those split-second decisions.
You look at a guy like Chauvin, Carl, he had 18 marks against him, you know, complaints. You know, you kind of wonder, okay, what are we doing about it, you know? It seems to me training in and around the country is just lacking. De-escalation maybe needs to be put in there. You look at some of the incidents. You look at the incident regarding Adam Toledo in Chicago March 29th with Eric Stillman, the officer. He had four or five complaints against him. You know, it's just an ongoing thing. You know, you look at the Dante Wright deal with Kimberly Potter, 20, even though 26 years on the force for her white police officer. Training, where's the training? You know, taking out a taser, taking out a gun, which side is it on? Do you not feel the weight? Can you see the color of the taser? It's yellow, right? So, in essence, I think what you're seeing here is just a lack thereof regarding training and everything else. And some of it, I got to tell you, you know, is racially motivated. And you look at what happened in Virginia with a Lieutenant Rosario, who had a new car, license plate affixed towards the top window, back window on the right. I guess the cops didn't see it, but yet guns were pulled, told him to get out of the car. The man was pepper sprayed, somebody who was serving our country. You know, it's just such a disengagement of how people have to operate in and around the country. It's amazing. What about those aspects?
Well, you know, what's sad, though, is that this is a vicious cycle. The more people get angry at police and defund the police and all of that, first of all, the fewer police there are, it's really hard now to get to recruit police and sheriffs. But the more that there is this the more that cops are being killed, I mean, especially I'm from New York, and I'm born and bred, and it makes me sick to my stomach to see the violence that is increasing in New York, and it's not just New York, but that hurts me the most. And it's a vicious cycle, because the more that the police are made to be fearful that people are out there to kill them, to attack them, as they have been doing, then it's more likely that they're going to pull their gun because they actually are in fear for their life.
There's no question. And, you know, you bring up New York. I mean, there's a reason why crimes have gone up all over the place. Murders and burglaries and auto thefts left and right. And there's a reason for that. And, you know, part of it is the flimsy bail laws. You know, we talk about it all the time.
Yes.
But the fact that, you know, you have the mayor, you have the governor here, who just do not embrace what our men and women do on a daily basis, put their lives on the line in blue, what they do on a daily basis, is another prime example. And that's why you have cops retiring at early ages, and you can't even get recruits now. You know, the numbers are down all over the place. And there's a reason for that. But quite frankly, we have the best police on the planet, not only the NYPD, but here on the island. And there's a reason why people are summoned from these parts to go to other parts of the country and teach some of the practices of what has worked in our region. And that's why you have people that go to Ferguson, that go all over the place and just see what their departments are all about and figure out what they can do better, because there's plenty of how people can operate and better. And listen, we had two incidents in the last couple of days, North Carolina, right, Columbus, the other day. I mean, now listen, I'm not saying justification was in place. You know, a lot of these incidents can be de-escalated, but that comes down to training again, right? It comes down to training, Carol. And that's what we see a lack of right now around this country.
Well, that is part of it. But I really think that the worst part is the defunding the police, and the worst part is the actual legitimate fear that police can have. Because, I mean, look at all this past year, look at all the police who were attacked, who were killed, who were just, you know, who were doing nothing except sitting in their police car. So, of course, you know, if two policemen can be sitting in a police car and just have people walk up to them and shoot them, you know, it's not unreasonable for them to think that their life is in danger when they actually are confronting someone who's committing a crime.
No question about it. But, you know, there has to be improvement in everything else. take me to what could be going forward here. You have the appeal that'll be in place, hopefully a sequestering of people, maybe a change of venue, we'll see. Cahill, the judge, is going to impose sentencing, I think, in 8 weeks, somewhere in that two-month timeline.
Yes, yeah.
That is going to be a very important time. Now, we're going to have a lull in the action for a couple of months, we know, and that sentence, all eyes on that sentencing. And, you know, the thing that bothers me in the state of Minnesota, and I brought this up yesterday to one of the attorneys, you know, you have 12 and a half year on the average for these types of charges and convictions. Do you see something different as far as what Peter Cahill can put forth? Because you're going to have some instantaneous ramifications if they are not eyed upon as far as being fair.
Well, you know, he's in the same boat as the jury in terms of feeling like whatever he makes as a decision can be reacted to, will be reacted to. So, in other words, if people think that he didn't give enough time, enough of a sentence to Chauvin, then, you know, that could be used as an excuse to explode and loot and all of that. And one of the sad things, I mean, I'm not trying to say that Chauvin doesn't deserve any punishment or didn't deserve to be found guilty of something, but one of the unfortunate things, just in terms of courts and cases, is that because of COVID, you know, he sat there the whole time with a mask, and then he didn't testify, which probably couldn't have won either way, because they really would have gone after him if he did testify. But he was sitting there the whole time with a mask, relatively impassive, and he wasn't humanized. I actually contacted his defense attorney. I sent him an email to tell him that during his closing argument that I thought he should pay attention not just to facts, but to talking about Chauvin's life, you know, his coming from a broken home when he was a child, his different jobs before he became a police officer, his medals as a police officer, just various things from his life to make him a human being. Because sitting behind that mask, just, as I said, impassively the whole time, I don't think no matter what the case was, the jury wouldn't have liked him or wouldn't have seen him as a human being.
You know, listen, I said that all along. I thought that was a massive mistake. Listen, they had nothing to lose. They were going to lose this case either way, but what have you got to lose, right? You put Chauvin on the stand, you try and humanize him in some sort of way. Listen, it's very tough when you have video, when you have 9 minutes, 29 seconds, when you have a knee on the neck, even 2 or 3 minutes after the man is deceased. The eyes don't lie here, and that's what the jury pretty much saw and made up their minds. But in my opinion, I agree with you. I even stated this the last couple of days. You must put Chauvin on the stand. You got nothing to lose. You're down two, as they correlated to the game of football, you're down 2 or 3 touchdowns with 2.5 minutes left in the game. What have you got to lose by putting your client on the stand? That was an egregious mistake. Maybe Chauvin didn't want to get on the stand. Maybe he just didn't want to do it, you know? But at least, you know, try and paint a picture from way back of Derek Chauvin, you know, whatever he did in his life that was good. We don't know a lot about it, right? But at least present that to the jury and try and somehow, as you put it, humanize the man in a way.
Yes,
you know?
It's a lot easier to convict someone of greater crimes if you're not feeling like they're a human being, if you don't know about all the difficulties they had in their life. I mean, everybody has difficulties, so and that's not that that excuses him from what he did, but at least it would have given him a chance. I think probably Chauvin didn't want to go on the stand because he was afraid of what he was going to be asked. But yes, at this point, I think it really, I thought his attorney was really good at the beginning. He kind of petered out a bit in his closing argument. I didn't think he had quite as much verve or impulsion, you know, to maybe because by that point, he thought that he was going to appeal, but he still should have, I don't know, or maybe he was just exhausted from all these trial days. but I didn't think he had, it was as strong as he had been at the beginning.
He definitely petered out at the end. Listen, the only way he could have made up any ground is to put his client on the stand, which didn't happen, we know. So we'll see what happens in the next couple. It's going to be interesting. We'll have you on again, Carol. I can't thank you enough for a couple of minutes. I think you're on the, are you on the West Coast now as we speak?
Yes, I did. But, you know, I went to Stony Brook.
Even though it's a quarter after five there, we appreciate it. By the way, Carol's website, check it out, carollieberman.md.com. Okay, Carol, that's with an E at the end, carollieberman.md.com. She, indeed, a forensic psychiatrist, expert witness extraordinaire, and that's why she's known as America's psychiatrist. We'll have you on again to analyze it all. Lots of cases coming up. Can't thank you enough for coming here to the airwaves on Long Island.
You're very welcome.